Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Small business owner, you're special among Americans. You are a latter-day pioneer of our society and truly one of America's heroes. Welcome back, heroes. 13 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I appreciate you checking that out. Be sure to go there and look and check out the archive section, because when you do, you will find our guest this hour represented, very well represented. I've forgotten six or eight different archives that have Doug Stives, our resident CPA of this show, on them, and check them out. I think you'll enjoy them. There's some good information there. Doug is the tax partner at Kirchen & Company, the largest CPA firm in Red Bank, New Jersey. He's a member of our Brain Trust, and he is our resident CPA. Doug, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
It's good to be back with you. It's been too long. Is it election day in New Jersey?
What do you mean? We're on the same planet, and I think we're in the same country.
Well, it's...
Everybody gives us a bad time from our funny state up here.
No, I'm not. Well, wait a minute, Doug. You're so defensive. Are all CPAs so defensive?
Oh, listen, I got on an airplane Sunday night, and the guy said, we're going to Newark, New Jersey, and I didn't laugh. In fact, nobody did.
It's election day in Virginia, I know.
Right.
I'm not sure about what other states. If it's election day in your state, call me and tell me what states are having, if your state's having its election today. But the state of Virginia is, so be sure to vote. If you're listening over WMET or over the Internet in WMET out of Gaithersburg, Maryland, that's getting down into Virginia, or if you're listening over the Internet and whatever other stations I have in Virginia that I might not know about, get out and vote today. Be sure you do that. And seriously, is it election day in New Jersey?
Of course, first Tuesday of the month.
See, it's not election day in all states, so don't, you know.
Well,
did you think it was
for federal elections? It is, right?
No, not really? In all states.
Well, you know, I figure because it is in New Jersey, everybody else better shape up.
Yeah, no, it's not in all states, but. If you think about it, this is kind of an off year.
Oh, sure.
See, last year and next year are the that's the reason I was surprised to see that some of these were. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see. You just got back from the capital of our country, Washington, D.C., to attend an AICPA tax meeting, right?
Yes.
Here's the correct name. I butchered that one.
Well, it's got a big deal name. It's the National Conference on Federal Taxes.
All right.
And just think about it. There were 600 CPAs all in the same room.
Right.
Isn't that exciting?
How much no-dos do you think was consumed during those 4 days?
I do that instead of going on vacation, Jim.
You're a sick man, Doug.
Right.
What happened? What'd you find out? What'd you learn?
Well, we had a couple of, you know, nationally known speakers, including the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, who brought us up to date.
Charles Rossetti.
Good guy. Tried to give us some... examples of what he thinks is going to happen and things administratively that have happened.
Tell us why. I want you to get into that, but a lot of us read about this guy Charles Rossetti, and the things that I see, and I worship at the throne of results. So I have been following his fairly short career with the IRS, and I do think that he's got some positive results going in his administration there. But tell me why you think he's a good guy.
Okay. Couple of reasons. First of all, he just completed 2 years, a short term to go into a business. Remember, the IRS is bigger than any country.
Oh, yeah.
Most countries, okay? Mm-hmm. Impossible job, but the fact that the guy has made the amount of progress he has. Remember, he doesn't have control over revenues. Congress does that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not like the guy running Disney that just says, I want to make more money, so let's raise the rates.
So it's like having all of the responsibility and none of the authority.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they keep telling him, they keep passing all these things in Congress, which we'll talk about in a minute, that says, here's what the IRS has to do. And he says, good, now I need the money. And they tell him he can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question directly, Jim, he's a businessman.
Yeah.
He is not a bureaucrat. He's not some congressman's cousin that said the right things and went to the right schools. This guy came up through the computer industry, and I emphasize that because the IRS is just in desperate straits with computers that were designed during the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact. And the first thing he told us in his talk on Tuesday was that the IRS is Y2K prepared. Of course, even if they aren't, he's going to tell you that they are.
See, a lot of people were kind of hoping they weren't.
He commented on that.
They were hoping that things would just shut down. And
he commented on that. He said, the media's had a field day on that, and even computer experts said, their computers are all going to crash. And he said that since he started 2 years ago, that's been his priority project. He said there's no other way they could do it. Now, he did warn us this. He said, some of you fellas are going to get some strange letters. He said, we've already had some that people have gotten in the media about that IRS sent somebody $18 million and, told him he had made a mistake. and others that got notices that said they owed $18 million.
Uh-huh. That's the one I would get.
Well, yeah. And his comment was that, that happens. Bear with us. He said, we're human. Our computers, they tell us they're ready. He said, there are going to be some mistakes, but we're not going to crash and burn, was the message.
What a breath of fresh air to actually be talking to someone who talks and thinks like you and I.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. He also, now, I won't name other commissioners, but we've had some that came up there, with two Secret Service guys standing at the base of the podium, peering around with those silly-looking shades that they wear, and, got up there, read a speech, never smiled. This guy comes in, he shakes hands on the way up to the podium.
You mean like a real human being?
Calls people by their first name, hi, how you doing? Gets up there, kind of leans on the podium. Last year when he spoke to us, he was just using some old ratty-looking slides, no PowerPoint, no slick stuff. This year he had no audio visual. Again, called by people by name out of the audience for questions.
I'll be darned.
And says little things to make you smile. He says, "Gee, I never thought about that. Let me make a note of that."
Well, what do you think that maybe this model might filter over into other parts of the administration?
I would hope so. I would hope so. And we could
that's a pretty good model, pretty good success story there, isn't it?
It is, and we could get going on whether Clinton knows what he's doing or not, but the advice he got here was, hey, we need a businessman in there. The IRS is in deep, deep trouble.
Listen, I have given the president lots of accolades for things like Rosati, for people like Rosati, people like Aida Alvarez, people like, Greenspan, Chairman Greenspan with the Fed. I mean, there are a number of appointments like that makes lots of sense. It was actually were watershed decisions compared to some of the things that's been decided, some of the people have been put in, in the past.
Well, you mentioned Greenspan. I have to go there for a minute. And yes, I agree. I think he's one of the smartest guys in the world, literally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's scary, isn't it, Jim, the power that he has?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the market depends on what he has for lunch.
I'm already worried about his predecessor, though. I mean his successor, I should say. All right, stand by, folks. When we come back, we're going to get Doug to tell us some of the things he learned at this tax conference in Washington, D.C. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, 888-822-8255. And Robert Cray said it best, Doug.
Where'd you find that? He's a retired CPA,
Doug Stiers, ladies and gentlemen. Not the guy singing. That's Robert Cray.
Great.
The voice here on the other end of the show here. That's Doug Stiers. He's our resident CPA, and he's with Kirchen & Company. And we're talking about some tax stuff. He just got back from a tax conference in Washington, D.C. And thank you for sharing that information on Mr. Rosati. I read a lot about him in the Journal, in the Wall Street Journal, and other areas, and other people have said some very similar things to him. But I never have spoken to anyone who's actually, been in the same room with him, so to speak. And it's good to know that. I tell you, it doesn't help you. It doesn't make you feel any more warm and fuzzy when you send in your tax money. But it is good to know that there are people up there who are not just out to get you. There's somebody up there who actually has paid taxes themselves before. But anyway, I want to get into some of the things that you learned.
Yeah, okay. The thing that really was the main topic, if you will, once we talked about the readiness, was the so-called corporate tax shelters that have gotten a lot of press.
A lot of people hear about that. Congress is, certain elements in Congress are saying, we're going to get rid of these corporate tax shelters. And I know some people with corporations, and they're saying, I don't have any of those.
Right, right. And most people don't. That's what I want to assure people. If you're depreciating your assets and picking up your income and doing the things that accountants are supposed to teach you how to do correctly, you don't have any problem. But there are, unfortunately, a number of people out there, and I must say mostly larger corporations, not the people that we talk to, Jim, no way, right,
mm-hmm.
that have gotten a little aggressive. They've gone out and hired some of the biggest law firms and accounting firms in the country and said, look, I'd rather pay you guys and pay the IRS, dream something up for me.
Yeah.
And the example that the commissioner himself gave us during his talk on Tuesday was a bunch of companies that will go offshore and lease a government building. He used the example of a city hall in a foreign country.
Yeah.
You can imagine. So, you know, what some big company does is they take a lease on that city hall, and they prepay the lease. You know, they like to figure out what the rent's going to be for 5 years and pay it all up front.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is beyond my skill level, but apparently there's somehow that you can deduct all that in one shot when it's foreign, okay? I don't deal with foreign clients, so, you know, went beyond what I do. But then apparently what they do is, and the company then is the tenant, so to speak, but then they lease it back to the foreign country. And as the income comes back in, they recognize it over the 5 or 10 years at least. Sounds just ridiculous. But some way or other, they wind up not having to pay tax on the money that's come in the first place.
So they lease it themselves and then sublease it back to...
Yeah, which it's a sham.
Yeah.
But they do it, and they're getting away with it. And I say some major law firms and some major accounting firms are charging big fat fees to dream up these scams. And this is only one of them, but this is one the commissioner responded to, and he said we spend thousands of man hours tracking these things down and then going after people, and he says sometimes we have to go into the courts to get a court to be convinced that this is absolutely not what you're supposed to do.
But doesn't this start with legislation? Somebody sticking a little wrinkle into they've got a company in their district and they stick this little wrinkle into this omnibus bill or whatever, and nobody even knows it's there.
Well, apparently in this one, Jim, what it is you try to give some kind of a relief to a company that's spending money in some of these depressed countries, which sounds like a wonderful thing to do, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'll be sarcastic and say, why don't we take care of our own people, but I realize you're not a political show, okay?
Right. Well, no, you can be that political, because I agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and some people are going to say, oh, how can you say such a thing? Well, I just said it. You know, they send money out of the country and take a deduction for it, and then wind up not paying income tax until the money comes back in over a 10-year period.
Well, what are some of the other tax shelters?
Another one he didn't mention, but one of my favorites, if you will, is a wrinkle in the tax law. I didn't realize it, but Indians don't pay income tax. Did you know that?
Native Americans.
Yeah.
Pay income tax.
Right. Those kind of Indians. Uh-huh. Right. Native Americans. And what they do...
I think I do remember that.
Well, it kind of caught me off guard, too, frankly.
Why is that? I mean, in other words, if a Native American were the president of Coca-Cola and he made $18 million, he wouldn't pay taxes?
Well, that I'm not really sure about.
You're talking about as they're situated in the reservation,
right,
situation?
Exactly.
Their casinos and all that?
The Indian tribes.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. Stand by, Doug. We'll talk about this some more when we come back.
Okay.
And Doug's got some things toward the end of the hour, folks. We're going to be talking about some new things that you need to be getting ready for with your small business as we come to the end of the tax year. It's 29 after. Stay with us. We're back. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our phone number, if you'd like to join us. If you have a question for our guest and our good friend Doug Stiers, 888-822-8255. If you're getting ready for year end, you're thinking about, you'd like to know about some things that you need to be doing, and which we may or may not be able to get to all those today, which we won't get to all of them, obviously. But if you got a specific question, 888-822-8255. James Pearson's on the board. He's the best, and he'll take your call and put you right through to us. Doug Stiers, talk to us about... did you have any more of the tax shelters? I wanted you to give us a couple or three of these because we read about these things. We hear politicians saying, we're going to get rid of these corporate tax shelters, and we say, you know, what are those things?
Yeah. Well, they're so off the wall. I think the way I have to answer the question is that, you know, some of my clients have come to me and said, hey, you know, can I do this? I'm willing to take the risk. And the examples I gave before the break of running a city hall in a depressed country, or what you did, we start talking about the Indian reservations.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about that.
You basically take the stock in your corporation and you give it to an Indian tribe, and then when you liquidate the corporation, you don't get into the feared second tier of tax that we try to work around. And what happens, though, is then all the assets that are in that corporation wind up being the assets of the Indian reservation.
Yeah.
And then somehow you got to get them back. And, you know, I can't begin to tell you how to do that. And I hate to be so vague, but this is not easy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly...
It almost sounds a little larcenous, doesn't it?
Well, it is. It absolutely is. I mean, you know, this is why the bureaucrats and people in government get so frustrated. They say, look, we we're trying to enforce the law. We're trying to treat everybody equally. Of course, then the public turns around and says, but that's the problem. You don't. And, you know, the hearings that led to the 1998 legislation to tell the IRS to cool it a little bit, you know, came from some of these horror stories where the IRS was not even handed. And that's going back to just wrap up, Jim, is this fella Rosati, he's only human. He's got a tough job. He doesn't have enough money. And I hate to keep sounding like he's my best friend, but, you know, he's done more for the IRS in 2 years than I've seen happen there in the last 20 years.
Compared to his predecessors, he's a breath of fresh air.
Well, some of the predecessors were good people, too, but they didn't have the skills and experience out in industry that this young man had.
Right, yeah. You say young man, how old is he?
He's in his 50s, which,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's a child.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very, very young.
Well, he's one of my contemporaries, let's put it that way.
Mine, too.
Young.
Talk to us about what he said about e-filing.
E-filing, okay. Congress gave a mandate to the Internal Revenue Service that by the year 2007, 85% of all tax returns need to be electronically filed.
85% by 2007.
And they're running about 15% at this point, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, most of those are low-end returns. So the real challenge is going to be to take these 100-page returns and figure out how to get them to go through the computer to get directly into the IRS's computer. Understand the goal is because it's to save a whole bunch of money so somebody at the IRS doesn't have to sit there and keep punch in hundreds of pages of data on some of the complicated returns. Also, for the consumer, it speeds up a refund, tells you right while you're connected by computer whether your return is acceptable by the IRS computer and mathematically correct in those things.
Saves a lot of time going back and forth in the mail, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the service, Internal Revenue Service, has been very frustrated that my profession has not really embraced this concept because, frankly, it doesn't save us any time at all.
It actually, in the ramp-up stage, it's going to cost you a lot of time and money, isn't it?
Yep. So where they're going is they're trying to appeal finally to the tax preparation industry, CPAs and other tax preparers out there, to give us something back. And just a couple of quickies is that they're going to probably expedite the extension process a little bit. This has not passed yet, but this is some of the proposals coming out of the IRS National Office. That, for example, if a client agrees to go on an e-file, that they wouldn't have to ask for an extension. It would be able to file their return perhaps a month or two late. You know, a little value there, if you will.
So, in other words, if the CPA firm was all crunched up and with the ramp up, as I say, the ramp up stage, and they didn't get my taxes done, my account didn't get mine done by April 15th, then we wouldn't have to file an extension. We just wouldn't do it until it was ready in a month or so, and it would be okay.
Yeah, that's only a proposal, but that's
okay.
That's what they're
heading toward.
That's one of them. Yep.
That's interesting. I can see there being some problems with that, though.
Well, the one that I like is that if I became a what they're going to put different levels, you're going to have like bronze, silver, and gold, you know, depending on how many.
This is like Amway, like with being with Amway.
And like the airline frequent flyers, right?
<Yeah. laughs>
And if I do a certain percentage of my returns that I'm responsible for on the electronic filing system, I would have access to the IRS's computer after a certain level.
Ooh.
Meaning that if I file your return under the current system, you get a notice, and nobody understands their notices. You come to me, I have to write to the IRS, sometimes take months to resolve it. Under this proposal, if I were a major e-filing base, and you come to me and we e-file you, and a month later, IRS writes to you or has a problem, I can go right onto my computer and directly get into the Internal Revenue Service computer and hopefully resolve the problem without having to write a letter or even make a phone call.
And folks, somebody might be saying, Doug, well, why do I care if it takes so long? Well, guess what? The IRS, if you owe them money, they will charge you interest and penalties.
Well, they'll harass you, too. It's
yeah.
No problem.
That's right.
And one of the biggest frustrations in our practice, Jim, is people coming to us and say, well, I got this letter from the IRS. I don't understand it, or I think they're wrong, or I know they're wrong. And Doug, can you resolve it?
What do you think the chances of this e-filing proposals? What do you think the chances are that would make it?
The latter one, I think, almost 100%.
Yeah, I can see that. Stand by, Doug. We've got to take a break, folks. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We're back. It's 44 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Be sure to check out Doug Stiles when you're there. He's very well represented in our archives, our advocate archives, and he is the tax partner managing the tax department at Kirsten & Company, which is the largest CPA firm, all 28 or 29 right now.
Hey, we're up to 31 now.
All right, 31 in central New Jersey. And, Doug, if someone wanted to contact your company, your CPA firm, how would they do that?
Well, the easiest way is to pick up the phone and call 732-747-0500.
When are we going to get you guys a website?
Oh, we got one of those, too.
Tell us about
Don't
it.
Don't ask me the website address at 7 in the morning.
Well, it's got to be KirchenCompany.com or something.
Nah, no, something like that. But
okay.
if I give it wrong, then that's not a good service. So I'll give you my email if you like.
Well, I'm gonna have to tell on you to your marketing partner.
Well, they keep changing it. See, we had one, and they took it down. And anyhow,
All right.
Ask me next week what it is.
All right, I will. Another thing that you learned while you were there was the electronic funds transfer, paying your taxes electronically.
Mm-hmm.
Not just filing electronically, but paying electronically.
Right. And just as we lead into that, this is, I think a lot of people out there listening that have small businesses are using this. And I think everyone would agree with me that this is good stuff. This is not complication. It is simplification. The system 99% of the time works. And for those that don't know what we're talking about, if you have a business and you withhold payroll taxes, for years and years and years you had to make those payroll tax deposits by going to your local bank and writing out a check.
Mm-hmm.
Now you pick up the telephone, and just by working with your touch-tone pad there, you effectively make your payroll tax deposit.
And they draft it off of your bank account?
With a series of passwords and so forth. I mean,
yeah.
You're using a computer to transfer money out of your account at a predetermined transfer account into the Internal Revenue Services.
That but now, you know, most of us go to the bank every day anyway.
Not as much anymore.
To make deposits and things like that?
Yeah, I'll go with you and say yes, they do.
So why is this that big a deal?
Well, I think it is because, number one, you can wait till the last minute to make your deposit, even though we recommend that people do it the day before it's due.
Yeah.
And you get a confirmation right on the spot. And you don't have to go wait in any lines. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I realize that doesn't sound like a big deal to a lot of people. But
it's a bigger deal. Let's be honest. Isn't it a bigger deal for the IRS than it is for us?
Oh, sure. But
because they get their money that day. They don't wait a week for the check to get in.
Yeah, I'll give you another point where I think it's good for the businessman, though, Jim, is that you know it's there. You get a confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
We've had over the years, you know, hundreds of problems where bank screwed up or check didn't clear or whatever.
Well, the post office doesn't postmark that envelope correctly, and you get a penalty for it.
Well, of course, if you're making a deposit at the bank, you escape going through the
post.
Well,
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. But it's good stuff, and what they've done is that they've marked it as a very successful program.
What's the new stuff?
Well, what they've done is when they first came out, they said if you make $50,000 worth of tax deposits in a year, you must go to this EFT program.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so successful, and so many people have done it voluntarily. First of January, they're going to change it to where if you don't want to do it, as long as your deposits are below $200,000, three to fourfold what the level was, Jim, they're not going to require you to do it.
So they think that people will just be attracted to it because it's just easier and more desirable than going to the bank.
Exactly, but the point is, if you don't like it, you know, you don't want to do it. You say, there's nothing in it for me, I'm just doing more work for the government, then fine. If your deposits are under $200,000, you know, in the course of a year, then if you want to, you can go back and continue to make deposits at the bank if that turns you on more than dealing with a computer.
Right. What about this taxpayer advocate situation?
Okay.
I've been reading about, it's actually a group, isn't it? A group of people who are part of the taxpayer advocacy.
Yeah, and now understand, these people work for the Internal Revenue Service. But the Internal Revenue Service has established, it's coming up on 2 years old, the Taxpayers Advocate Office. There's a gentleman who has an office in Washington right inside the IRS.
But isn't there a volunteer council or something like that?
Well, there's a volunteer. There's the Commissioner's Advisory Task Force.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, that's been around for a long time. But this Taxpayers Advocate thing is, and these are paid government workers, but as the name implies, they're there if you're having a problem. They're like the public defender in the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
You call these people up, and there's a representative now in each IRS district around the country. And believe me, they're going to be a little undermanned. But the point is, if you think you're being harassed or you think you've been mistreated by the IRS, you don't have to run out and hire yourself an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
You call these people, and you say, look, I want you to tell me why they're doing this to me, and I want you to call the people that need to be contacted to call off the dogs or whatever the problem
mm-hmm.
is. Now, if you're wrong, they can't help you a whole lot.
Right.
But if you've written and nobody responds to you, or they don't seem to be reading your mail, You get copies of your correspondence into these people.
What do you think about that? About this department?
Well, I think it's long overdue.
Is it going to work?
It's working. Some people will tell you that it isn't because it comes down to, you know, who you get, who gets your case.
Yeah.
Again, comparable. You go if you can't afford or you don't want to hire a lawyer, you go get a public defender.
But do you feel like when you make a call to these people, they are IRS employees? Do you feel like you're getting an advocate when you make that call?
Oh, the limited experience we've had with them, Jim, is that they'll say to you, "Well, you know, what do you want us to do?" And you tell them, "It's oh, we think we can do even better than that."
Oh.
You know, I'll say,
that's
"Well,
an advocate."
I mean, just for, well, I'll go even beyond the advocate's office. I have a case right now with the collection people. They're after a client of mine who owes several hundred thousand dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And even the collection people, had a guy in my office a couple of weeks ago. I was trying to work out an installment sale with him,
mm-hmm.
where my client would pay so much a month.
Yep.
He came back, he said, "Doug, I think we can do better than that. I think we can get some of this written off through an offering compromise."
You're starting to scare me, Doug.
Yeah.
This is getting scary. IRS being nice, imagine that.
Well, working.
Stand by, Doug. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 50 after. Doug Stives is our guest. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. And you're listening to the show that is dedicated to being able to tell time. Doug Stives is our guest, folks. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. Doug is our resident CPA. And, Doug, one of the 20 ways to a happier life includes never give up on anybody. Miracles do happen.
I like that.
I do, too. Yeah, that's a good one. Tell us about some of the things that you had some home office things that you learned.
Yeah, not necessarily at this conference we've been talking about, but it's kind of a wind down for the hour here. Is the only major change, and it's not really very major, the only significant change in the tax law that affects 1999 tax returns, other than some rate changes, is the fact that a lot of people, a lot of small businesses, can now this year, 1999, deduct part of their home if they have an office in their home,
mm-hmm.
where they store equipment or inventory, whatever there. We don't have time to go into a long discussion on that, Jim, but a lot of people since 1993 have not been entitled to take a portion of their home expenses against their business income because of a case in 1993 called the Solomon case.
Mm-hmm.
But what the 97 tax law did that took effect for 1999, this is, you know, new for 1999 now, said that if you have a portion of your home where you do significant management and administrative duties involving your business, you can then deduct a portion of the expenses that are applicable to that operating that office in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And I've oversimplified it, and I ask people to be very careful and get some professional advice before you run out and start writing off part of your house again. But earlier this year, the Treasury Service gave us some clarification that if you operate an office in your home, and even if you depreciate a room or two over the next couple of years, as long as you convert that portion of your home back into a personal residence, you know, take that office and convert it back into a bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and leave it as a bedroom for 2 years before you sell the house. When you sell the house, you don't have to pay any capital gains tax, even though you've treated part of that house as a business office for several years.
But if you don't do that, if you aren't able to do that 2 years,
mm-hmm.
what do you got, recapture?
Yep. And what happens if you're using, say, 20% of your home as an office and you sell it today, you've got to pay tax on 20% of that capital gain
mm-hmm.
inside your house. So
I'm trying to figure out how this would work. You don't recapture the whole thing because it's just a portion of what you deducted that you recapture, right?
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
Right, right. It's a little complicated, but
yeah.
The good news that it is I can use part of my home as my office, and then if I decide I'm going to retire or I'm going to move and I want to sell this house that I live in,
yeah.
What I do is just convert that room back into a personal residential use for a bedroom or family room or
mm-hmm.
whatever for
2 years.
And I can sell, and I don't have any kind of a capital gain to report.
Doug, I've got about 15, 20 seconds or so. Tell us some other things that we need to be thinking about. And you're going to be back with us in a couple of weeks to talk to us about some year-end stuff, but give us a couple of quick ones.
Well, as December 31st approaches, only, about 60 days away,
yeah.
Pay your invoices. You know, get those any money you have, you spend it before the end of the year to get your deductions. Delay your billings. You got a big bill that you want to send out, send it out in January instead of December so you
yeah.
don't get the money till next year, don't pay tax on it. And if you're sitting, like most people are, with some capital gains from the stock market, you might want to think about selling off some of your dogs, taking some losses, is offset those gains with losses to the extent that you can.
Thanks, Doug. Good job. We'll see you back in a couple of 3 weeks. We'll talk some more about this. You did a good job today.
Thank you.
See you later. Doug Stiles, ladies and gentlemen. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, never be afraid to try something new. Amateurs built the Ark. Professionals built the Titanic. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.